This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher's Keys. Hello, 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 hello. Welcome to the Out of Bounds podcast. My name is Adam Jabber. I am your host. It is a very gloomy Tuesday in New England, and I hope you're listening to the show because it's dropping today. Tuesdays are our day now. Tuesdays and Thursdays are what we're doing going forward, so look out for new episodes then, including this one with Simon Dumont. Can't thank Simon enough for coming on the show. If you guys don't know who Simon Dumont is, I'm not even going to tell you who he is because you should know who Simon Dumont is if you're listening to this show. We talk about all kinds of stuff. We talk about where he's been the last 5 or 6 years. We talk about what prompted him from taking a break from the public side of the ski industry because he kind of just went dark for a little while. Had some injuries, felt kind of burnt out, and just kind of disappeared. And we talk about why and how that happened. We also talk about where he's at now. Like, what's the plan going forward? We talk about the new podcast that he started, Ascension. We talk about why he started it. What his plans are for everything. I mean, and I think you'll notice, like, he sounds extremely introspective. Sounds like he's had some good time to actually think about some stuff. And I really, really enjoyed this conversation. So thank you again to Simon for allowing us to have it. And yeah, he also was gracious enough to give us 3 pairs of Empire gloves to give away. So here's what we're going to do. If you are a subscriber to our show, Out of Bounds, and Ascension, Simon's show, send me a screenshot in my DMs or send it to me in an email. That'll count as 1 entry to win a pair of Empire gloves, courtesy of Simon. We will do the normal like, comment, tag thing that we do on Instagram for a giveaway as well. This will just be another way to get yourself an entry to winning a pair of Empires. So do that. Look out for that post on Tuesday evening, tonight evening. And yeah, Simon will send you a pair of gloves if you win. We'll pick a winner on Friday. A couple things before we start the show. Pearl Wax is back. They are a sponsor of this episode. If you don't know what Pearl is, you should be able to figure it out from their name. They do make wax, but they do more than that. They are committed to a minimalistic footprint environmentally when it comes to wax making. Obviously, there is a lot of dirty stuff with, in terms of environmental impact when it comes to fluorinated wax. So Pearl has eliminated all fluorinated waxes from their line. However, their moniker is faster than you. And the product is great. Like, it's super, like, it's high quality wax. It is more eco-friendly. They do that by eliminating all those fluoros. They're based in Colorado. And they've been making wax since 1999. This stuff is excellent. I mean, for me, I use that purple stuff all the time. Like, that's my go-to. That's the all-temp. You can get that stuff. I mean, just buy a brick, buy 2 bricks, buy 5 bricks. That stuff is where it's at. It's really all I use, whether it's, like, we're talking in the shop, that's what I use. If we're talking about, like, in my own personal kit, like, that's what I use. Regardless of whether they're a sponsor or not. They are an excellent company, and they're great people over there. You can use promo code OUTOFBOUNDS, all caps, to save 20% off of your first order of any product at pearlwax.com. So use it, promo code OUTOFBOUNDS, all caps, 20% off. Get yourself prepped for ski season 2021, because it's happening. Like, it is, we are skiing this year. It's a thing, no matter what. We're skiing. I don't care if we have to walk up everything. You still need wax to slide down. So get on that. And then I just wanted to say a quick thank you to my friends at Fisher Skis. They have always been excellent to me. And they are, like, new product is showing up in shops right now. They make everything from true touring stuff, like
pretty much unlike what a lot of these companies are calling like touring gear. They make legit touring product. What I've been using pretty often is the Hannibal 96. That's been like my go-to ski for a touring ski. It's super light, but it's stiff. It has some meat to it. 21 meter radius at a 176. It's a blast and it looks sick. They also have a series called the Transalp. That series is really popular as well this year for people looking for those weight weenie kits. Excellent product all around. And then don't forget, they have a new boot or a redesigned version of their ever popular Ranger boot. Better liner, upgraded 100%, a little heavier, but it just is to increase downhill performance. Boot ski's great. I've been skiing on it since probably like February or something like that, maybe even earlier. It's a big upgrade for sure. And the boot was already excellent. So it's a nice thing for sure. You can go to fishersports.com and check out all that stuff and stop into your local retailer. See if they can hook you up on some Fisher gear. And if you have gear questions, shoot me a DM. I know a ton of you have already, and I do my best to answer as many of them as I can. But that's the idea. Yeah. That's it. That's all I've got for you guys. Be sure to follow us on social media. It's just at Out of Podcast across the board, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I don't really use, but it's on there if you care. And leave us a review on iTunes if you can. I mean, that helps people find the show. And that is the one big ask I can give you is if you can, go on there, leave us a 5-star review, give us some feedback on the show, and help us grow this thing. Or keep growing this thing. All right, without further ado, here is Simon Dumont. Thank you. So, Simon, tell people who you are. Tell people a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
I'm Simon Dumont. Who am I?
It's a deeper question.
Yeah. How much time we got? I was a professional free skier. Now I am retired, figuring out other things in life, and started the podcast and just hanging. Yeah, I don't really know how to describe myself.
Yeah, is that like I thought about that before I even called you. Like, what do you say now? Like, do you still like you just say you're a retired pro free skier? Like, there's so much more than that, I guess. Is that like if somebody just is like, hey, what do you do? Like, is that how you go about it?
I mean, I guess that's kind of the process I've been through. It's I identified as a free skier for a lot of my life. So, and that encapsulated pretty much every component of my life. Because I talk about when I was free skiing, I put everything into my respected discipline, and I was willing to sacrifice like relationships, everything for a singular directive. And then when I decided to step away from free skiing, I was left with having to figure out how to come up with a different identity that is not synonymous with skiing. And that was a very difficult journey. So I don't even really talk about skiing that much. It's so weird that I don't even, like, even when I watch old ski videos and like the quarter pipe record or anything that comes up on Instagram or something like that, it's hard for me to even recall who that person was because I've gone through quite a change to be the person I am now.
Yeah. Do you think it's just the fact, like, I've read a couple interviews now, or I read the Ski Journal one that you did, and you were talking about just being burnt out. Like, what is it that, like, full commitment that causes you to feel that burnt out? I mean, what was it?
I mean, it's a pretty difficult task to put all you have into something and to approach things at such a high level. Like, I mean, not even just the physical strain, but the mental strain, like to go and try to achieve things and continue to strive and evolve and progress. It's quite taxing. Like, I mean, it's hard to turn it off because I turned into a madman when I skied, and people could perceive that as whatever they want, maybe a dick, maybe an arrogant, but I just understood that, like, walking that line between chaos and order It's fleeting at best. So when I got into those zones, I wanted to make sure that nothing permeated that area and that I could just perform at the highest level. So I shut everything else out. So it was it's just taxing. And then eventually for me, it just I guess as I don't know, I just got to a point where even the successes that I had, I may have habituated to it, if that makes any sense.
What do you
mean?
It
goes like, okay, another X Games. All right,
Yeah.
It wasn't like the elation and the same fervor and determination that I had when I was younger. Like when I was young, it was like, I just want to be the best. I want to win all these contests. And then once I started to do it, and then things, I started to get paid to do it. And it's easy to get complacent with passion and like the monetary component. And they started to fluctuate back and forth. Like sometimes I was like, ooh, am I doing this just for the money? Like, and then like sometimes I would win X Games, or I'd get a podium at X Games, and it'd just be like, it'd be more of a sigh of relief rather than like elation or striving to like want to win. It's just like, oh, okay, I did it. On to the next one. And I never really, I wasn't enjoying the process as much. It was more about just get the accolades at the end.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that sounds miserable. Like in all honesty, like, I mean, the success of it, I'm sure, is like, that mindset is something that you, like, not many people are going to be in. Like there's like a few elite performers ever that are going to be in that kind of like in that space where you're at the top of whatever your field is. I guess I can see how you get there, but like, that's such an odd thing to think about, right? It's like, you think about like being the best, and then you get to being the best or one of the best, and you're like, you know, why am I doing this?
Well, it just, I don't know if everybody gets that story that, find something you're passionate about, pursue said passion, figure out how to monetize it, have money, have success, have the house, have the car, have the things, create this this American dream. And then once you achieve it, you will finally enter into that illusory utopia and life will be perfect. Except they don't let you know that life still continues to happen. And I don't think I don't think the whole point of this whole game of life isn't to arrive somewhere. Like, I think the whole process is the point. And it was a harsh realization when I achieved a lot of the things that I wanted to achieve, but I still had this, like, I felt like something was missing in my life. And it was all the other components to life. Like, to live unidimensionally, for me, I think is quite limiting. I think it's necessary to strive and achieve at the highest level. But at the same time, I think it was limiting in like a fulfilled life, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Were you like a super competitive kid? Like, did you start like right off the rip, like being that, like wanting to be the best?
I am.
Like, you still are.
I've worked really hard to like balance my life out and find somewhat of like a higher transcendent moral ideal to start striving towards. But as soon as I stand in any competitive atmosphere, I turn into a different person.
Really?
Oh yeah. Like if I'm playing against somebody and it's a team sport and you're on the other side, even if you're my best friend, you're my fucking enemy. Like, I can't see anything good about you. I just want to crush. And that's how I am in most things. I'm so competitive. It's unbelievable.
Is that hard for like, do you have that mindset all the time? Like, do you look at everything as a competition? So like, for example, you have a podcast. Do you look at like the numbers and the performance of your show as a competition?
I don't see it as a competition, but I look to the people that are performing best in whatever venture that I'm starting to pursue. And I compare myself to that highest ideal. And but I also understand the process, which is something great too. like, okay, I'm looking at, let's say, Joe Rogan.
Right.
Has the most views, just that big Spotify deal. Okay. But then I could compare myself to Joe Rogan and I could be like, well, I've been doing this for 6 months and I don't have the Joe Rogan numbers and I'm not making the Joe Rogan money and all this nonsense. But I also understand the process. Like, he did that over 10 years.
Right.
And he did the grind and he probably failed a bunch and made a bunch of mistakes, but then also had a lot of great things. Like, I understand the process. Like, I understand embracing the suck because I know things are going to be shitty at times. Like, there's so many times where I'm like, why the fuck am I doing this podcast?
Mm.
Like, when I listen to one of my own podcasts, I want to punch myself in the face. I'm like, I hope other people don't hear me the way that I hear myself because I'm so censorious towards myself. It's unbelievable. So, but then every single night, I usually like journal, kind of take an inventory of my day. And I'm just like, trust the process.
Yeah.
Trust the process. You weren't the best skier overnight or you didn't create your skill skiing overnight. Trust the process.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Like, I for sure... even now, like, I have a hard time listening to my own shit. Like, it's like, you're just like, why did I say that like that? Why did I listen? Like, why didn't I listen better? Why didn't I do this? But I guess, like you said, it's all part of it, right?
Oh yeah. And then the other thing is it's very easy to, maybe get distracted by comments or other people online. And then, so obviously, I would guess midway through my career, like, New Schoolers and all these other websites came up. And when you are usually succeeding or you're putting yourself out there in a vulnerable way, people will obviously comment on it. And a lot of times, I think the internet and our social media structure is structured in a way that if you can tear somebody down, most of the time people will give you accolades for that. Like, it's almost applauded when you burn somebody really well.
Yeah.
So it's very necessary for me to, one, I really try hard not to read any of that nonsense. And the other way is to realize that this isn't a normal interaction. Like, every person I've ever met face to face has always been so kind,
right.
So nice, right. So awesome. Because the internet, you don't ever have to worry about, like, getting punched in the face. In a real world interaction, there are consequences for being a dick. So you have to have some civility. But online, as people are just throwing things into the void, and as soon as somebody gets some applause for being a dick, it's like, oh, I'm going to continue to do that. So I don't know. Weird waters to tread, I guess.
It's really funny. I read a comment. It was like from Paul Felder, who's like an MMA fighter. And somebody was like, Paul, you suck. Like, you're a freaking loser. Like, I'll beat your ass. And then he like responded and was like, hey, like, I'll meet you like wherever you want. And then the guy was like, nah, you'll kick my ass. Like, just, and that was, it was funny to just see like how that is like the epitome of like what an internet troll is, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, even it's human nature. Like, we're attuned to notice anomalous events. Like, when everything is going right in my life, I don't notice anything. Like, my perfection right. is used to cancel things out. Because it's even funny. I read through comments and let's say 100 of them are great. You're the best. Everything's great. I love what you're doing. You're helping me, so on and so forth. But there's that one. And all of a sudden, that one turns in, I magnify it and that one turns into everything. And it's just, I don't know. It's easy to get distracted by those. And I think sometimes it may... stunt, hinder, or direct creativity. And I think that is deleterious to the creative process.
How did you get to this point, like now? Like, you seem to be very conscious of the actions that you're taking. You seem to be very thoughtful in how your approach is right now. Were you, I can't imagine you were like that 10 years ago. Like, did something happen in that process? Like, what's that like?
Well, I mean, I think like the development process in itself, like it starts with, I think I may not be able to articulate or abstract the actions that I'm taking, but I was taking actions that I was unaware of, but now I've spent enough time to be able to like reflect and think back on things. And now I can actually articulate and abstract the pieces of gold that I was implementing in action previously. But at the same time, I've also spent the last like 6 years in meditation and like self-evolvement and all this stuff that I would have beat myself up about when I was younger, thinking that that's a lame pursuit. But it's a more fulfilling pursuit, like how to be like a good person.
Yeah.
It gets hard to even define the word good, but I'm trying to be as good as I can.
Yeah. I guess it's just interesting to hear like how introspective like your thoughts are, I guess, because that's like not a way that now there's like definitely a movement towards people like taking care of their mental health and like taking care of the way that they think about things, but it definitely wasn't the norm, you know, a few years ago. And then you kind of just like disappeared from the ski media, from ski culture, it seemed like, for, you know, however long it was, 4, 5, 6 years. Like, and then now you're back and like it sounds like you're like reinvigorated. Is that true?
I mean, I've always been like an avid reader. I've always been quite captivated by ideas. I guess me leaving the ski industry, I just knew I had to, like, as I said, that whole rebuilding process and redefining who you are. Like if I had one foot in skiing, I don't think that ever would have happened. Cause as soon, even this year when I strapped on my skis and I skied with Wallish for a week, all of a sudden I have these grandiose ideas of, I could probably do this again. And then I'm thinking about like, maybe a segment or, oh, what about that hip record? I always wanted to break the hip record. I bet I could go really high on the hip. And it's like, that's the insanity of this mind. So it's like, when I quit, I really had to step away. And the other thing is, I knew I could have sucked money out of the industry for another 10 years.
Yeah.
And just like stayed around and just leveraged my name and not really done anything and got paid. But that just didn't seem to equate, because if I'm not excelling, I don't think there's a point in really, really doing it.
Yeah. I think people respect that part about it too. And I think that's part of the reason that like when that edit of you and Walsh came out, people were like, yo, like it blew up. Like it was everywhere. It was like, I mean, people were so excited to see it. And I think it's because like when you left, you were still good. Like you were still the shit, you know? So people were excited to see you come back because it felt like you just disappeared, like you just vanished into thin air.
I think it was mostly competitive pipe skiing that wore me down.
Right.
Because like I wasn't a huge fan of skiing half pipe. Like people that are just half pipe skiers, I don't know how they do it. I applaud you because I don't have the mental fortitude to just ski just half pipe. Like I skied half pipe so I could make money to do the other components of skiing. Like, I competed in slopestyle. I competed in big air. I loved filming. I loved spring park shoots. Like all of that stuff was so great. And then this idea of Olympics, which I wasn't looking at that for anything except monetarily.
Right.
I was looking at that for selfish reasons. I didn't really think about what it would do to our sport or the integrity or the creativity or anything like that. I was thinking about it selfishly. And I think if Olympics didn't come on, I probably would have let go of competition skiing and focused more on filming. And I mean, it's always talking about the past, but I think that's what really burned me out. And then 8 surgeries in a row.
Yeah, that's just brutal.
It's a sick joke. So
yeah, that's terrible. Do you have any intention of like getting back to doing like edits and parts? Like, is that going to be a regular thing for you? Do you think it's feasible for you to go out there and just be like, yeah, I'm going to put out an edit like every once in a while and just go skiing and like just enjoy the skiing part of it?
I don't know that word fun. Am I pronouncing that correctly? it's French or something. Either way, that word, it's still a hypothesis for me. It's becoming a theory, but like last year was, I just, my body felt good. I forgot what it was like to not be sore skiing, and it was spring. Mm. And I didn't realize that I was still, because all the training that I did before, like it doesn't just go away. It might've been like a little bit dormant, like those neurological connections I built over years of just practice were still just waiting. So as soon as I started skiing and I was like, damn, I'm actually pretty okay at this. And it's, I was doing tricks that I'd never done before. And it was kind of fun, but I don't know, because it's hard for me to pursue something without turning into letting it consume my life and excluding other portions of my life that I've found a lot of joy in now, like being a good boyfriend, which is a novel concept, but it's something that is a lot more fulfilling than just going out there and skiing. So I don't really have any plans at the moment. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. And I can't imagine that there aren't ski brands trying to throw shit at you too. Like, I mean, it's not that you're like hurting for a sponsor, but I thought it was hilarious that you were like hashtagging everything sponsor me for a little while. Like it's funny because like the industry is starving for this kind of like engagement, like fan engagement that you brought out, you and Tom brought out in that last bit. Like everybody seemed to be clamoring for it.
Yeah, that shit was hilarious to me. Like I'm glad you saw that there was humor in it and there wasn't like I was out there.
Oh yeah. Really. Imagine if I was like, hey dude, do you need a sponsor that bad? I could hook you up.
I mean, I can't believe how much I took maybe for granted free product and all the things that I got. Because even at the end of my career, like I had some sponsors that I broke up the deal. Like we had a contract signed and I was like, okay, I can't take your money. Like I'm not going to ski. So it's like, I literally needed to step back from that and take that approach. And, I don't know. I think that the ski industry, if there is one thing that people are missing from, the brand perspective and even competition perspective, it's building the icons and taking care of the icons within our sports. Like it's such a shame that people aren't utilizing that and building stories up around these people. Cause I remember I just talked to Mike Douglas and we were talking about X Games and our rivalry between Tanner and I and why X Games was so engaging, because we had this story of like Tanner had a certain image, which was a little bit more heterodox and kind of stonerish. And then I was almost like this jock looking dude, and it was like the American kid family type person, and it was just this rivalry that they built up. Even though like we were friends, they built this story up around us that made it so compelling. And that's I think another thing that a lot of the brands are missing out on right now, instead of just picking up 10 influencers in Park City who have like 5,000 followers each. Why not really build some icons up in our sport and build a story around them and help them transcend the small free skiing community, which will hopefully create some sort of reciprocal effect from those outside viewers back into our niche sport.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the ski industry, I think, does a very bad job at not just building up rivalries and store, but like the full story of what a skier, what a pro. It, like, you don't feel like you know any of these people until they like sit down and they have a long conversation with someone. Like, you don't get enough out of it, I guess. And I don't think the brands do enough of a good job like promoting, like, these are the kinds of people we like to sponsor, right? Like, here's, you know, skier A, and this is his personality type, this is a little bit about him, like, and they kind of like, they don't showcase those people. It's like every time there's a new hot kid, we're just gonna jump on the hot kid and like fuck the old guy. Like, it seems like they do that too much. I mean, fucking Seth Morrison doesn't have a ski sponsor. Like, I mean, that's like it's so mind-blowing to me. It just doesn't make any sense, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems a hindrance for everybody involved. And I think that is one of the huge reasons I kind of am starting the podcast is because I feel like that is something that we are really missing, is this long form engagement. Like, when do you ever get a chance to really sit down with somebody for, I usually go from like an hour and a half to 3 hours and just ask somebody anything you want. I mean, with this idea that I'm not here to attack or like get you or anything like that. I'm just, it's full inquiry. And you get to converse with somebody. And every podcast I've had thus far, like at the beginning, it's this kind of weird feeling each other out, kind of question answer. And then by the end, it's like, oh, I really want to be friends with this person. Like right. almost every single person, right. or I have a completely different idea of who the person was before I entered the conversation. Like I remember Tanner and I, like we've hung out and we've talked and we've gotten along, but we've never really sat down and connected on a deeper fundamental level. And then by the end, it was like, he was talking to me like we were long lost friends, and I like had the same yearning to connect with him. And it was just is an experience that I think a lot of people are not getting at the current moment.
100%. I mean, I think that's the most beneficial thing personally for me doing this show is like, you talk to someone and you're like, you immediately feel a real connection with them, because even if it's like, sometimes we'll do them in their half an hour, sometimes we do them in their an hour, sometimes they're longer, but like even just 20, 30 minutes of like engaged conversation with someone is not a thing that you get regularly in your life, especially not with other, like with people who are in the same space, like who occupy the same space as you. Mm. Like you don't get to like really dive in, because like all the same events are happening around both of you. You're just like, you have different perspectives of how those events are happening, which I think is one of the best parts about it. And that's kind of why I think you doing a podcast occupies a different space than like what I do or what Powell does or what someone else does. Like it is the same in a way, but your experiences and the way that you viewed the industry in the past however long, and just you viewed being you for the last, you know, however old you are. How old are you now?
34.
So the last 34 years, like the way that you viewed the world is different than someone else's. And that experience is very like, it's very personal and it brings your own take to it. That like that Tanner interview, I think was very eye-opening for a lot of people, because the you can tell how much you guys related to each other, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's been a pretty amazing experience for me, is just finding a lot of concurrent themes with a lot of people who have been successful. And that same battle of trying to balance a normal, maybe I don't know what normal is, but a life of maybe relationships and full fulfillment at the same time of trying to achieve at like the highest level. And just hearing about the certain mindsets, like I just sat down with Paul Rodriguez, who's just this insane skateboarder. And like at the beginning of the conversation, I was like, damn, it's fucking Paul Rodriguez. And then because he's a legend. I mean,
yeah, totally.
Commercials with Kobe, all these different things, rest in peace. Yeah. And then by the end of the conversation, I was like, oh, I'm talking to somebody who kind of has the same mindset, almost the same story as me, just in a different aspect, in a different sport. Like, I mean, I remember him at, I think, 12 years old. He had ankle weights on and he was doing ollies in his backyard. And it was like me when I was 12 years old, like somebody said I couldn't pitch. And I was just started throwing a baseball against a wall until I was able to pitch. And it was just like, I just could see the correlation of mentality. And it was nice for me to realize that, yes, I may be a bit of a psychopath in my approach to certain things, but it's comforting to know that I'm not alone in my psychopathy.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I mean. Like the elite high performer type person, I mean, yeah, everybody's different, but like that level of conversation between athletes, I think, is extremely beneficial for other people to hear too, you know? Like I think that's just like a cool thing you're not going to get somewhere else. And I think that's what separates what you do a little more, you know?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, not to bring this on like the broader worldly issues here, but I, as we were talking about with just conversing with other people, let alone conversing with people that are similar, now that I've had this podcast and I've been able to witness myself and how I engage with other people, now when I converse with people with differing ideas than me, I can still find grounds to assimilate, and it tears down the divisiveness. And I think with this crazy world that we're in at the current moment, where we're all strapped to our side and lobbing things over the wall to see what will stick, tossing grenades at each other and just building this divide. I think it's so great to just, I think conversation in itself can be like that bridge that we need. Because even if I don't, because I've had conversations with people where we're still on the different, we have way differing ideas, but just the conversation, I'm like, oh yeah, you're still a human though. Oh yeah, I forgot that. Like, it's just, it's such a humanizing experience just to have a conversation. Even if I don't agree, I'm like, oh yeah, I know how you got there. Oh, I see that train of thought. Might not agree with it, but it's like, you're not malevolent and terrible and all these other things. You're just somebody who may think a little bit differently. That's okay. It just, for me, it's really, I guess, broaden my views of humanity, which is quite a broad statement, but I think it's been helpful in all kinds of different components rather than just the podcast world.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. You're 100% right. And I think the world could, everybody can benefit from having a little more conversation because there's so much engagement, like in your own phone, in your own bubble, like just like on social media. It's like, you don't see, back to what we were saying earlier, is like, you don't see that immediate reaction from someone when you say a shitty thing to them, you know, like you don't see that immediate feedback, I guess. You get a different kind of immediate feedback where it's like a like or a click or an argument over the internet, but you don't feel like there's a real thing on the other end of that.
Yeah. And don't even get me started on social media and like the idea of confirmation bias and just, I mean, it's just, I try to limit my use on social media because I'm completely aware of the confirmation bias and the algorithms to just, I think it's a faulty way of thinking. Like I like to discover an idea or a concept and then try to prove myself wrong. And if I can't, then maybe there's a solid idea instead of having an idea and then finding all the information that I'm right. It's just a faulty way to think. And I think now we're getting on to all kinds of different topics, but
oh, yeah.
I just think we're just in a weird time in the world right now. I'm trying to figure it out and see if there's a small role I can play to make it better, even if it's in the most immediate range in my life. I think it can have a exponential effect if I can at least do something in my small bubble.
Yeah. It's got to start somewhere.
For sure.
It's all fucking crazy. Have you watched that new Netflix has that like social dilemma thing on? Have you watched that
yet? I did just watch that.
What'd you think?
It seems plausible to me that exactly what I'm talking about right now.
Right.
Like, I mean, if you spend a minute on, cause I work really hard to try to like listen to all kinds of different things. Like I'll listen to somebody who's conservative and then I'll listen to somebody who's liberal and then I will like check out different timelines and all of a sudden it's like, it's whichever one I tap into, it's like, that's what I see for the entire day.
Right.
It's like, it's just feeding me more of the same thing. Like this is this person. And then all of a sudden it's just feeding the idea. So I like really try to balance things out and I could easily see how that could be the case.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'd highly recommend people go watch that if you want to be, I'm sure it wasn't like new news to me either. Like I think for most people it was kind of like, yeah, like I know, but for some people it'll be a good slap upside the head, I think.
Oh yeah.
All right, we've got a bunch of questions from people, so I just want to ask you a couple and then we'll get you out of here. Let's see here. A lot of contract questions. That's fun. We're not going to do those. Ascension podcast with Candide?
Candide is a mythical unicorn that owns the world, and I have tried to contact him and have been unsuccessful at the current moment, but that is one I would really love to have because he is a living legend.
Yeah, I've tried the same and had the same results, so let me know if you find him. I'd like to find him too. I don't know anybody that's like seen the dude in real life even. Like I feel like he's truly a unicorn.
I mean, I was very fortunate to be able to hang out with him in his home resort, and he showed me around and he's just like a god there, and he was such a chill dude, and I'm hoping beyond hope that it will happen at some point, but we'll see.
So you can confirm he's a real person though.
I mean, unless there's something going on that I'm unaware of. Unless he has a double that hangs out with the lesser people, then I can confirm that the person I hung out with, I think, is Candide.
All right. Let's see here. Explain the time, Tony Zook wants to know, explain the time you almost died in Park City.
I think you summed it up pretty well. I almost died in Park City.
skiing?
Yeah, so there was a, what was it? I think it was like 6 in the morning. At this point in my life, I was 18 years old. I was skiing on another level. Like, I think for that entire month, I hadn't even fallen over. Like, I'm talking like rail tricks. Like, I was skiing on a level that is unfathomable. And then they built this jump at 6 in the morning, and it was a terribly built jump. Super flat takeoff with a really, really steep landing. But and the knuckle was freaking bulletproof. And it was a sled toe in, which is super awesome. And me just being so gung-ho and confident beyond belief, the snowmobile pulled me in, and I was like, okay, the landing's so long, I could land 3/4 of the way down the landing and I'll be fine. So I was like, I'd rather take a little more speed than hit this knuckle in at 6 in the morning when it's bulletproof. So the sled went, and then like I pulled off the sled, and as soon as I pulled off the sled, I was like in the like transition of the takeoff. And as soon as I was there, I was like, yep, this is going to be really, really bad. And I knew it. So I went from, I think, the right side of the jump to the left side of the jump. Like, I was trying to cover as much area as I could. And as soon as I went off the jump, it was like, I don't know if anybody's had a dream of overshooting an air hill or anything like that. But, like, literally exactly what entered my mind. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do? And I was like, I'm going to try to land on my feet and then fall to my side. And, I mean, I went from probably 100 feet to dead flat.
Fuck.
I wasn't wearing a helmet. I made a hole in the ice with my head that was probably 5-6 inches. I woke up and I felt like I pulled my groin muscle, but little did I know that I had internal bleeding and I fractured my pelvis in 3 places. But at that time, you could tell how hillbilly things work because I actually walked to the snowmobile.
What the fuck?
Yeah, and then they put me in the back of a car and they were going to bring me home. And I was like, I don't know. I might have broken a rib. Let's go to the hospital. And then I found out I ruptured my spleen and it was bleeding. It was bleeding. I was peeing blood and I had a fractured pelvis in 3 places. And it was not, that was the first, I think, really big accident that I had. But with my naive, young arrogance, I didn't even, it's still hard for me to even think about that and have like, any negative effects towards it. Like, it was just, I was like, nothing. It was a freak thing that happened. It's never going to happen again. And it just, yeah, I moved on so quickly.
God damn. That's fucking brutal. Like, I'm like, my stomach is turning just thinking about that shit. So.
Oh, I watch it and I'm like, I'm.
You watch? How do you do that?
Because it's not, I mean, I'm fine. Like, it wasn't, I mean, I'm surprised I didn't die. That's what's just crazy that, I don't, because that's the thing. I've seen so many of my friends have crashes.
Yeah.
And they aren't even that gnarly. Like, for instance, Sarah Burke up there in Park City, like, it wasn't, I've talked to lots of people and they're like, it wasn't the craziest crash we've ever seen. Like, I was like, oh, she might have a little concussion and she's going to be fine. Everything's fine.
Fuck.
And then lo and behold, everything lines up and things transpired the way that they do. So, I mean, it just makes me realize that life's a game of inches and seconds, and I consider myself very, very lucky for what happened up there. And that's the other thing, is that now I have a responsibility to value this thing called life, because there are other people who have gone through things that looked like they weren't as bad as me, and they don't have the opportunity to continue to embrace this thing. So give me a new perspective.
Right. All right. One last question. Jammin' Jamel wants to know favorite interview on the podcast so far. Was there a conversation that stuck out?
There's been a couple of them. I mean, I like the Alex Shalopy podcast just because it was real, and it was almost a little bit cathartic for me because I don't know if a lot of people knew my journey, so it was nice to kind of share about that. Tanner was great. Then the other thing that's the most fun and enlightening for me are people that aren't skiers. Like, I love talking to Kai Lenny, who's a big wave surfer.
Mm-hmm.
I love talking to Taylor Finney, who was a road biker. I mean, it was awesome talking to Paul Rodriguez. I mean, my idea with the podcast is I'm trying to capture the audience that I obviously followed me along my journey. And then I hope to, I don't want to like make a direct pivot and start all of a sudden just interviewing people that are way off in left field. Like, I'm still going to have a nice mixture of athletes and other people, but I really want to learn from other people. So I'm going to broaden who I start interviewing.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time, dude. This has been great.
Yeah, no worries.
Where can people find the podcast? Where can people find, I mean, I'm sure people can find you on social media just fine, but where is the podcast available at this point?
Yeah, it's called Ascension Podcast, and you can find it pretty much anywhere you download podcasts, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify. I don't know what other people listen to for podcasts, but it should be available everywhere and anywhere. If you give us a thumbs up, likes, all that stuff, it just helps. Because like you, I'm sure you just want to make this bigger and better, make the sound quality better. I want to start having more guests in person. And I have ideas for this beyond where it is. And I think if more people engage in it and give me good feedback and positive, negative feedback, not just, hey, you're a fucking asshole. Cool. I mean, I get it. But
yeah, give us words.
yeah, like some things we can actually improve. I accept that humbly. So that's where you can check that out. And that's pretty much it.
Beautiful. All right, buddy. Thank you so much. All right, that was episode number 116 of the Out of Bounds podcast. Simon Dumont, let me know what you guys thought of the episode. I really enjoyed it. You can find out all the stuff on the episode on our website. It's just www.outofpodcast.com. We are now putting up some more detailed information with every episode, some fun stuff, links, and blah, 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 blah. So check out the website. We're kind of moving into the next phase of this thing we call Out of Bounds, which is going to have a little more content for everybody all the time, hopefully. That's it for now. I hope you guys enjoy it. Be sure to check out that giveaway that is on the socials right now. On Thursday, we have Kurt Niller. And yeah, that's an excellent episode as well. You 100% should check that one out. All right, cool. Talk to you. Bye.